this is Millie Long, co-editor-in-chief of the American Journal of Gastroenterology, and welcome to our podcast this month. I am pleased to have our guest, Tilak Shah, who is medical director of the Pancreas Center at Cleveland Clinic, Florida, and also an associate editor for the journal. So, Tilak, it's fun to have you on this side of things. Welcome to the podcast as an author.
Well, thank you. It's a pleasure, and thank you for having me here.
Well, you know, we were excited to talk about your paper that was published this month in Red Journal because it's such a common clinical scenario. And so, you know, obviously this paper, you looked into the outcomes of individuals with mildly elevated lipase, which is something, at least in my practice, I see not infrequently, looking at long-term risks. Could you tell us a little bit about the main driver for this study and what your goals were?
You know, this was really driven by a clinical practice in our pancreas clinic. You know, this would be a common issue at least a few times a week. I still have patients who come in, and what typically happens is they're having abdominal pain or some GI symptoms, and as part of the workup, a lipase level is drawn, and it doesn't quite meet the criteria of pancreatitis, which would really be closer to 3 times the upper limit of normal, but it's just mildly elevated. And then, you know, so it doesn't meet the definition of pancreatitis, but obviously it's there. So we end up seeing these folks. And, you know, there are some data on like, well, you know, what workup do you do for somebody who initially has a mildly elevated lipase? We have a list of things that can cause your lipase level to go up. But, you know, we'd see patients in clinic, and what they would want to know and what they would be asking us as well, A, am I ever going to get pancreatitis because of this? And B, you know, what really worries a lot of my patients is when they hear the word pancreas, they hear about pancreatic cancer. And then they say, I hear pancreatic cancer is terrible. You know, does this mean I could get pancreatic cancer? And the reality, as we looked at the literature, is nobody's actually looked at, well, if you have a mildly elevated lipase, in the long term, what is your risk of either developing acute pancreatitis in the future or pancreatic cancer in the future? So that really kind of prompted us to look at this question.
Absolutely. Very clinically relevant question for patients and frankly for providers, because obviously if there is a difference there, it's something we'd want to implement potentially protocols or ways to assess for these patients. So tell us a little bit about what you did, what the overall study design was and what your findings were.
Yeah, and this started with, you know, with some of our fellows in clinic kind of seeing this question too, and they said, well, how can we answer this question? So, you know, we went through a few, you know, possibilities of how do we really answer this question, because we want to look at long-term risk. So what we did is we took patients who are diagnosed with pancreatitis or had this mildly elevated lipase level between 2011 and 2013. But then to compare risk, we really needed a group of, you know, fairly similar patients who did not have an elevated lipase level. So what we did is we looked at folks within the Cleveland Clinic enterprise. That includes patients in Ohio, Florida, patients in rural hospitals, rural clinic settings, as well as urban, and who were seen in GI clinics for evaluation of abdominal pain or GI complaints. And we took one group of patients who have this mildly elevated lipase, which we defined as less than 3 times the upper limit of normal, and another group of patients who had these symptoms but had a normal lipase. And then we tried to make sure, you know, with a mildly elevated lipase, we weren't missing, you know, some obvious things. Some folks could have had pancreatitis recently and they were kind of on the downtrend. So we looked back to make sure that there weren't those patients with that mildly elevated lipase didn't have pancreatitis in that period of time. We tried to exclude, you know, clear-cut reasons for an elevated lipase. So, for instance, if they have chronic kidney disease or chronic liver disease, it could just be that they have delayed clearance. And, you know, the clinical significance of that is really not much. Chronic pancreatitis. So we tried to take out some of those folks. And then we basically just followed them. We tried to make sure that we had at least 10 years of follow-up and really look at the question, you know, who developed acute pancreatitis, who developed pancreatic cancer, and were there any differences in the two groups?
Yeah, that's really interesting and clinically relevant. So what did you find?
Reassuringly, for the primary we had two primary outcomes. The first one was pancreatic cancer. And for that, really, you know, the long-term risk over 10 years is, you know, was 0.3% in the minimally or mildly elevated lipase group and 0.4% in the normal lipase group. And so really no difference. And that's really reassuring because I think that's what patients worry about the most. Now, the acute pancreatitis risk was elevated. So it was about 1.2% in the normal lipase group, 2.8% in the elevated lipase group. And so, you know, I think that's clinically relevant because it is a, you know, percentage increase, a percentage and a half increase, even when we controlled for some of the other variables that could confound our result. And it was statistically significant as well.
So a difference, but thankfully, the absolute risk is still quite low of developing acute pancreatitis. Were there differences amongst the populations, clinical characteristics amongst those that did versus did not develop the acute pancreatitis?
Yeah, because this was an unselected group of patients, you know, there were a fair number of differences, and they weren't, luckily, they, for better or for worse, they weren't uniform across the board. So, for instance, gallstones were more prevalent in the normal lipase group, whereas tobacco use was, active tobacco use was more common in the mildly elevated lipase groups, and both of those could be confounders. And there were several others. And so we did, you know, do a multivariable logistic regression model to try and control for that. But obviously those inequalities did exist because it was a retrospective study.
Well, it makes you think too, that if these differences are there, could there be preventive efforts? You know, that's obviously what we as clinicians are thinking about. So we know that there's this higher absolute risk potentially of acute pancreatitis in the individuals with mildly elevated lipase. What would you recommend clinicians out there who are seeing these patients in clinic? So they have a mildly elevated lipase, which is less than three times the upper limit of normal based on the definition. How would you treat them in your clinic? How would you monitor? Would you try to do any modification of risk factors? What would you recommend based on this?
Yeah, so it's already something that I've incorporated in my, you know, discussing our findings in clinic. And what I tell patients when they come in with this, so the first thing I tell them, look, we have no evidence that your risk of pancreatic cancer is elevated. And that automatically kind of brings the temperature down and they're reassured. And then I mentioned this, you know, acute pancreatitis risk, but just as you mentioned, I tell them, listen, an increased relative risk and an increased statistically significant risk still doesn't translate into a markedly elevated long-term risk, absolute risk. And so the absolute risk of developing an episode of acute pancreatitis is still low. So I reassure them a little bit. And then that brings to the next question of, well, are there any things that I can do? You tell me that there's an elevated absolute, you know, risk of acute pancreatitis. Is there anything I can do to reduce that risk? And, you know, while we didn't specifically address that in this study, I tell patients, well, the things we know that are modifiable and associated with acute pancreatitis are A, you know, stop drinking, or at least if you're drinking heavily, cut back on the amount of alcohol you drink, stop smoking. And then the third one, again, I don't have great data, but we do have, you know, a lot of these preliminary findings on fatty pancreas and similar to fatty liver, fat can damage the pancreas. And extrapolating from that, I tell patients, well, the best data we have in liver disease and heart disease is a diet that avoids processed foods, the so-called Mediterranean diet. So I say, listen, the things you can do are A, avoid heavy alcohol use, stop smoking, eat a diet that, you know, is low on processed foods or eliminates processed foods. And then, you know, avoid clear-cut medications that are associated with pancreatitis, which, I mean, the list is long, but when you actually look at the specific numbers, there's only two or three medications that are really associated with acute pancreatitis.
Which are those? Just so we can recognize that as clinicians.
Yeah, there's, you know, the big ones are actually in your realm.
Azathioprine, it does it.
and you know, at least the ones that we're told. And then there's some old HIV medications. The one that actually really, I'd say, again, comes up all the time in clinic are GLP-1 agonists. Mm-hmm. And actually, I would say there, that actually is the question that is a separate question that comes up to me. I had an episode of pancreatitis or my lipase is high. Can I continue the GLP-1 agonist? And the first point I tell patients is that actually GLP-1 agonists can increase your lipase level without you having acute pancreatitis. We have plenty of studies where we have found no association between GLP-1 agonists and pancreatitis. And recently, one of our fellows just did a study where we looked at folks who had acute pancreatitis and continued versus held the GLP-1 agonist. And we found that there was no difference in the pain. In fact, the folks on the GLP-1 agonist maybe even did a little bit better. So that question comes to me a lot. And I tell them that the best data we have is that maybe you ought to stay on a GLP-1 agonist.
Well, and because you just described fatty pancreas and how that may play a role, et cetera, and you could only imagine that utilizing the GLP-1 may actually reduce some of those risk factors.
Yeah, that's our theory, but obviously we have to, have a separate hypothesis that maybe GLP-1s may reduce pancreatitis risk, but that's a separate question.
Well, you know, given the work you've done here, which is so helpful in counseling patients, what do you think are the next step in terms of, obviously we've talked about one, which may be this role of GLP-1, but what do you think, kind of reading this study, which obviously is important retrospective cohort, so not at the, necessarily prospective observational data, and we talked about some of the caveats of that, but what do you think the next steps are for you and your research team?
Yeah, I think what would be really nice is, I think it would take a lot more resources, and it helps to have some retrospective data to justify this. Is one, to just kind of build a prospective database where we're following patients over time, and maybe not just looking at this one very specific factor, but looking at a lot of other, modifiable risk factors and things we can do to reduce risk of pancreatitis and cancer. So that would be one. But a second area would be really, kind of trying to understand pathophysiology, basic science. And really, I think this, as you brought up, this fatty pancreas and fat in the pancreas and, how it affects the pancreas and how we can modify that is really unlike in the case of fatty liver disease, is really not as well understood. And I think understanding that better, may actually, I think, maybe a lot of what we call idiopathic pancreatitis may in fact be, related in some respect to this, but really understanding that better, I think, are the next steps.
No, absolutely. I think that there's so many clinical contexts for an ultimate goal of potentially preventing pancreatic complications to better understand, as you mentioned, that pathophysiology, those risk factors, and prospective observational data could certainly help us to get there. Well, so this has really been great. I think we have a common clinical scenario that we now have data for counseling patients on what these absolute risks are. We have ideas about prevention in terms of some of the dietary modifications. I almost laughed when you mentioned the Mediterranean diet, because I think we all need to be on the Mediterranean diet. I'm actually an IBD doctor, and it's the same in inflammatory bowel disease. Let's all get off the processed food. And I think that could really help us in many of these avenues. But it's been great to talk about this, and we really appreciate your expertise and advice. Best of luck in your future research endeavors.
Well, thank you. I just wanted to give a final shout out to, Zed Ansari, who was the primary author on the project, one of our spectacular third-year fellows, and who also got a team of his co-fellows and research fellows and residents to kind of do a lot of the chart review necessary. So I just wanted to recognize all their efforts as well.
Oh, that's great. Well, we thank him. And obviously, we appreciate the roles of trainees in research, and we recognize that grunt work. And it's a lot of data to sift through over the 10 years of follow-up you've got. So we're thrilled to have access to the data. So thank you again to you and your research team.
Thank you.